This is Arturo Debito from Debito.org. This is the Debito.org podcast for June 1st, 2011. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Let me do two Japan Times Just Because articles for today. The first one is from Tuesday, October 6th, 2009. It's a Just Because Savoy case shines a spotlight on Japan's disappeared dads. Here we go. Making international, and for a lesser extent national, news recently has been the Savoy child abduction case. In brief, after a couple divorced in America, ex-wife Noriko Savoy absconded with their children to Japan. Then, ex-husband Christopher, who had been awarded custody in the U.S., came to Japan to take the kids back. On September 28th, he tried to get the children into the American consulate in Fukuoka, but was barred entry and arrested by the Japanese police for kidnapping. The case is messy, and, well, few divorces aren't, and I haven't the space here to deal with the minutiae, e.g., Christopher's quick remarriage, Noriko's $800,000 divorce award and ban on international travel, etc. Please read up online. So let's go beyond that and focus on how this case highlights why Japan must make fundamental promises and reforms. In Japan, divorce means that one side, usually the father, can lose all contact with the kids. Thanks to the Koseki Family Registry System, Japan has no joint custody, because you can't put a child on two people's koseki. Meanwhile, visitation rights, even if mandated by family court, are unenforceable. This happens in Japan regardless of nationality, and I speak from personal experience. I, too, am divorced, and as of this writing, have zero contact with my children. I've seen one of my daughters only once over the past 5 years. Standard operating procedure is the three Ds. Divorced, daddy, disappears. Add an international dimension to the marriage, and it's stunningly difficult for a non-Japanese parent of either gender to gain child custody, as foreigners, by definition, don't have a koseki. Add a transnational dimension, and the kids are gone. Many left-behind parents overseas receive no communication whatsoever until the children become adults. And there is no recourse. Although Japan has ratified the United Nations Conventions on the Rights of the Child, or UNCRC, it has not signed the Hague Convention on Child Abductions. It's the only holdout among the G7 developed countries. If brought to trial in Japan, our judges do not honor overseas court orders granting custody to the non-Japanese parent. In fact, according to the documentary From the Shadows, an estimated 300 such children are abducted to or within Japan each year, and none has ever been returned by Japanese authorities to a foreign parent. Until now, this issue received scant media attention. However, with the Savoy case, Japan has earned a worldwide reputation as a safe haven for abductions. This is, given the inhuman North Korean kidnappings of Japanese, a rather ironic position to be in. But before we get relativistic, be advised that there is no comity here. Although few, I know of none, foreigners have ever won repatriation rights or even custody in Japanese courts, the converse is not true. For example, in American courts, the U.S. recognizes the Hague-mandated concept of habitual residence, even if that doesn't mean America. The most famous abduction, then repatriation case, involved Elian Gonzalez from Cuba. According to court transcripts, Noriko Savoy did have a fair hearing abroad. The judge heard her out, believed her sworn testimony that she would not abduct the kids, and lifted the restraining order against her. She and the kids could travel to Japan briefly to explore their Japanese heritage. Then Noriko broke her oath, and Christopher boarded a plane. The point is this. Regardless of any extenuating circumstances in this messy affair, the lack of a post-divorce legal framework to prevent abductions, secure joint custody, and guarantee visitation rights forced Christopher to take the law into his own hands. Needless to say, it's the children that get hurt the most in this tug of war. If Japan's policymakers would secure the right of the child to know both their parents' inheritances, this nonsense would cease. But as with all social problems left to fester, things are only getting worse. U.S. Congressman Chris Smith announced September 29th that reported child abductions have increased, quote, 60% in the last 3 years, end quote. No doubt contributing to this rise is the grapevine effect among expat Japanese. A quick web search shows that all a potential abductor needs to do is board a plane to Japan, and they're scot-free. Injustice breeds drastic actions. How long before a vigilante parent takes the law so far that somebody gets injured or killed? Japan wants to avoid a demographic nightmare as its population drops. Understandably, international marriage is one solution. But this threat of abduction is now a prime deterrent to marrying any Japanese. One domestic spat with a threat to kidnap the kids, and conjugal trust is permanently destroyed. But just signing the Hague Convention won't fix things. Japan has, after all, inked umpteen international treaties, like the above-mentioned UNCRC, and ignores them by not enacting enforceable domestic laws. I don't anticipate any exception here. Japan giving more parental rights to non-Japanese through treaties than they would their own citizens? Sorry, that's inconceivable. What's necessary is more radical. Abolish the koseki system so that legal ties can extend to both parents regardless of nationality after divorce. In addition, our authorities must create more professional domestic dispute and mediation mechanisms. Consider the farcical Chote pre-divorce process. Inevitable problems arise in that complicated institution called marriage. Anyone, including Japanese, must have recourse, remedy, and redress. Without it, people will take matters into their own hands. There are plenty of times when adults just won't act like adults, but their children should not have to suffer for it. Reforms are necessary not just to prevent future cases like the Savoy's. Japan also needs more secure family laws for its own long-suffering, disappeared Japanese parents. All right, that's the end of the first article, and may I note here that I have actually written a book called Inappropriate, a novel of culture, kidnapping, and revenge in Japan, which deals in part with child abductions in Japan. So, if you want to know more about that book, go to debito.org/inappropriate, one word, .html. All right. And now for the second article. This is another Just Because column. It's Demography versus Demagoguery, When Politics and Science Collide. This is from the Japan Times, Tuesday, November 3rd, 2009. Last June, I attended a symposium sponsored by the German Institute of Japanese Studies, themed Imploding Populations, Global and Local Challenges to Demographic Change. I took in presentations about healthcare, international and domestic migration, and life in a geriatric society. There was nothing really all that surprising. The United Nations and our government acknowledged back in 2000 that Japan was heading for a demographic nightmare, a decreasing population, more old people than we can take care of, not enough young people to pay taxes, and economic decline. Shocking, however, was the bad science. The presenting Japanese scientists were deliberately ignoring data fundamental to their field. One panel was particularly odd. Panelists concluded, of course, that Japan must do something to stop this demographic juggernaut. A deputy director general at Japan's National Institute of Population and Social Security Research even extrapolated that Japanese would be extinct by the year 3000. Yet the prospect of Japan's decimation was no match for the fear of the foreign element. During the Q&A, I asked, "Sir, only briefly in your presentation do you mention letting foreigners into Japan as a possible solution? However, you depict the process not as immigration, or imi, but as the active use of the foreign working labor population. In Japanese, was 外国人労働力人口の活用. Why this rhetoric? The speaker hedged a bit, suddenly asserting that Japan is now a crowded island society. To paraphrase, he said, immigration is not an option for our society. Inflows must be strictly controlled for fear of overpopulation. Afterwards, one-on-one, I reconfirmed his intellectual disconnect. He further cited, quote, a lack of national consensus, end quote, on the issue. When I asked if this was not a vicious circle, i.e. avoiding public discussion of the issue means no possible consensus, he gave a non-committal answer. When I asked if immigration as a word had become more of a political term than a scientific one, he begged off replying any further. It seemed I opened Pandora's box. For the rest of the conference, whenever a Japanese presenter discussed every option for Japan's future but immigration, I mean they all avoided it, they played dodgeball with questions from other scientists. The ignorance was systematic, and only one gave a begrudging acknowledgement that foreigners might be necessary for Japan's future, although he personally couldn't imagine it. As a German expert of demographics told me afterwards, with some consternation, demographics is the study of population changes, births, deaths, inflows, and outflows. How can the Japanese demographers ignore inflows, even the possibility of them, in their assessments and still think they are doing good science? Well, the reason is because this science in Japan has become riddled with politics. We know Japan's population will continue to drop, yet extinction still seems preferable to letting people in to stay. Thus, immigration, like racial discrimination, see my Just Because column June 2, 2009, has become another taboo topic. One must not mention it by name, especially if you represent a government-funded think tank. Then, when you have whole branches of government studiously ignoring the issue, even though last June the health ministry proposed training for companies to hire more foreigners, the former Aso cabinet wouldn't consider immigration as one of its top five priority plans. We can but say that the ostrich is in full burrow mode. This is why I'm having trouble seeing any public policy, from the Nikkei workers being bribed to go home after two decades of contributions, to the proposed imports of Indonesian and Philippine nurses, as anything more than just another active use of the foreign working labor population, as he put it. Or more honestly put, programs exploiting revolving door employment regimes. How seriously can we continue to tempt foreign workers with the promise of a life in Japan in exchange for the best years of their labor productivity, only to revoke their livelihoods and pension contributions at the first opportunity, blaming globalization's vicissitudes? How seriously can we make continued employment contingent upon a qualification hurdle, such as a tough nursing exam, that would challenge even native speakers? This will only hurt us as a society in future. Again, we are on the cusp of a future in society which can't pay or take care of itself. It's already happening in Japan's depopulated countryside. Demographic science, if practiced properly, leads inevitably to that conclusion. So here's my reality check. Either way, people will come to Japan, even if it means they find an enfeebled or an empty island to live in. With a new political administration and government, we might as well consider bringing in people now while we have more energy and choices. Now, time out. Just like that guy at the think tank, it's time for me to be hit with a Davito-style question. I mean, who decides what Japan wants? Answer. We, residents, do, of course. But the people who represent or make decisions for us are not necessarily receptive enough, or all that developed as human beings, to understand one simple thing. People who appear to be different are not a threat. We cannot expect leaders and bureaucrats to guide us to a world they cannot envision. So I will keep asking the Davito questions and argue that people like us are a viable alternative to Japan's slow but inexorable decline. For Japan's sake, we must save us from ourselves. I'll suggest how in my next column. All right, and that will do it for this month's podcast. Thank you very much for listening. And now for the next Duran Duran track. This is again from their most recent album, All You Need Is Now, Before the Rain.
Stormy summer is rolling closer, lighting up this holy smoker. And if this drinking please the thinking, I toast to my own truth with this glass. All rise, you promises broken. Call my lovers by their names. Lost hearts and words that are spoken to the wind, which blows before.
All right. Thank you all very much for listening, and we'll see you next month. Everybody, take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.